This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later in the program, we'll talk with NPR's Peter Kenyon in Baghdad and White House correspondent Don Gagne about President Bush's visit to American troops in Iraq today. But first, it's that time of year again. No, not for gathering around the table with loved ones and carving into a roast turkey. It's time for Talk of the Nation's annual Turkey Awards. Over the course of this hour, a turkey will be defined as a gaffe, a misstep, a well-intentioned idea gone horribly awry. Perhaps it was Madonna writing a children's book, Grady Little deciding to leave Pedro in Game 7, or the effusive and apparently endless Friends farewell. We'll be joined by a parade of guests today to share the turkeys that made their lists for 2003. We also want to hear yours. Today is Thanksgiving. Religion and politics never make for polite dinner conversation, so let's try to leave them at the door. Call us with a light heart and a gentle skewer to nominate your turkeys of the past 12 months. The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And first up to bat today is Joe Queenan. He's the author most recently of True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans, and he joins us from Tarrytown, New York. Joe, always a pleasure.
Nice to be here.
Well, let's not waste any time. Let's get to it. What are your top turkeys of the year?
I'm going to have to go with the state of California, for starters, I think. The Gray Davis thing, the Schwarzenegger thing, the Michael Jackson thing. I think that if it was Michael Jackson all by himself or Gray Davis all by himself, that would be enough for most states. But I think that they've provided with the country with an immense amount of strange diversion in the past few months. So I'm going to go with the state of California.
It's incredible, isn't it, how their sideshows managed to time perfectly, one following another.
Well, it's, the whole thing at the end of Chinatown, there's that great line, "Let it go, Jack, it's Chinatown." And that's basically what you have to do with California, because you had OJ. Before that, you had DeLorean. Going back to the 20s, you had all kinds of strange scandals involving movie stars and Fatty Arbuckle and stuff. And it's just a state that keeps churning out this kind of weird behavior. They're right at the top.
Well, as a sports fan, any great offenses out there?
Well, obviously, we have to start with the Cubs and the Red Sox again disgracing themselves. In the case of the Cubs, disgracing themselves and then blaming it on the fan. Because as pathetic as the poor guy is, he just made an instinctive reach for the foul ball. That was not carte blanche for the Cubs pitchers to give up 18 runs in the next 10 innings. But I think that the Cubs were particularly ignominious. The thing is that the guy himself is such a turkey because he not only deprived Cubs fans of a great deal of pleasure, but he derived the tens of millions of people who have a kind of secret affection for the Cubs, of the pleasure of seeing the Cubs play the Red Sox. I also have a belief that, much like Lord Jim, poor Steve Bartman, that's the name of the guy who reached for the foul ball, He will do this again. At the end of his life, he will be sitting down the sidelines as the White Sox are going for their first World Series appearance since 1959. He will reach for the foul ball. It's like appointment in Samara. Fate will just seek him out again.
Well, here in the sort of the category of sports, we have an email from Joseph Daniels in Philadelphia. My choice for Turkey of the Year goes to the superb sports analyst prognosticator Rush Limbaugh. In my opinion, his disparaging remarks about the abilities of Pro Bowl quarterback Donovan McNabb has given our Philadelphia Eagles the needed fuel on the fire to go on to win 7 out of their past 8 games. Mr. McNabb's proficiency numbers have returned to their true form, and the Eagles are in good position to return for a third straight year to the NFC Championship.
Well, I'm glad that that email came from a nonpartisan listener, because I didn't want to get into the whole politics of the thing. But yes, Rush is right at the top of the list of turkeys, not only because the Donovan McNabb remark, it was interesting because McNabb is in fact not having a good year, but the Donovan McNabb remark was a classic case of, let's pick a fight that nobody wants. It's like people who want to refight the Civil War or people who can't let go of things that happened in the 1920s. There's a point where society says this argument is over. We're not going to continue it. Rush opened it up again. But I think the other people who should be singled out as turkeys are Chris Berman and the other guys who were in the booth on the panel with Rush Limbaugh and did not call him on that. And ESPN, of course, is our turkeys for hiring the guy, because you would have thought that people would have learned from the Dennis Miller experiment on Monday Night Football, keep politics and sports separate. Sports is bad enough without Rush Limbaugh.
I might have nominated the New York Football Giants, favored by some to be the best in that division this year, whose late-game antics infused magic into the schedules of both the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys, who have now gone on to dominate the NFC East. But
there's an interesting statistic, too, in that the punt that was run back by Brian Westbrook of the Eagles for a touchdown to beat the Giants with about a minute to go in the game, that was the first time that that had happened in the NFL in 70 years. And the Giants managed to lose two games this year, one on a botched kick at the end of a regular season game. They managed to lose two games in a single season that are the types of losses that a team might only experience over a period of decades. They are really quite horrible team.
You had to remind me of the run back there, didn't you?
I did. And, you know, getting back on the sports subject, let's not forget Bud Selig, a perennial turkey. He's on your list every year. This year they had the thing where the winner of the All-Star game decided who got the home field advantage in the World Series. He's also presiding over a sport that's literally been ravished by steroids. He's watching all of these franchises die, and his own franchise is in tatters because he's selling off the players. He is absolutely one of the most laughable people in the history of the Republic, a Republic that has produced quite a few laughable people.
And which at one time I actually did consider making the turkey the national bird, lest we forget.
Yes, they did. I think that was Ben Franklin's idea, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
Yes. There's a few people on the turkey list that I'm afraid are going to slip off if we're not careful. One of them is Mel Gibson. And this may be preemptive, but I just think this whole thing about making this passion movie where there is apparently considerable controversy regarding whether the Jews are once again being blamed for killing Christ, this again falls into the Rush Limbaugh category of let's open up an old wound that everybody else had assumed was sealed over. I think this may be preemptive, it may be early, but I think we've got a turkey on our hands here.
Any other actors or cultural icons?
Yes, Vin Diesel. A year ago, he was going to be the next Cary Grant. He was going to be the next Sean Connery. Then he made the movie Triple X, which did okay, and then he made a movie called A Man Apart, and now he's just another bald ex-bouncer with too many muscles. I believe he's had it. Rosie O'Donnell goes right on the turkey list.
Oh, she's got a couple of entries.
She has two entries. The one is the astonishing story of the magazine meltdown. And, of course, the magazine company must get much of the responsibility for coming out with a magazine named after a person who was only going to have a certain fleeting fame. But she also bankrolled the appalling Boy George musical Taboo, which stands to lose $20 million if it goes through its whole run until the end of January, as I hope it does, because that would be the last we saw of Rosie O'Donnell or Boy George.
Kind of makes a bounce look like a big hit. Anyway, let's get a caller involved. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's start with Roy, who's with us from Belmont, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Roy.
How you doing?
Okay. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
What's your turkey of the year?
I would have to say the new West Wing.
Ah, well, we had, the creator and artistic guider of the West Wing, a television program of considerable note, Joe Queenan, has left the program in the hands of, perhaps lesser mortals.
Yeah, but I must say I never watched that show anyway, so I don't care. I only watch professional sports. So I read about the West Wing thing melting down, but it doesn't seem like it's something appalling. It's not like Joe Millionaire, where the ratings for the second Joe Millionaire were just unbelievable. The first one, 40 million people watched. The second one, I think the first night it was on, it was less than 6 million people. It was just a complete debacle. So there you're talking about a complete kind of nuclear meltdown.
Well, Roy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And the West Wing, let's remind each other, is about as close to politics as we want to get this hour, because politics and religion, never too popular at the dinner table. So call with your cultural turkeys of the year, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And let's go with Jack, who's with us in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yes, my cultural turkey has to do with media terms. The one that I'm most familiar with these days is has to do with terrorist homicide killers. You always hear the reporter saying, today a suicide bomber, instead of saying a suicide bomber detonated his device, you always hear the reporter say, today a suicide bomber blew himself up. How come they never blow themselves sideways? It almost sounds like a Warner Brothers cartoon. Today, a suicide bomber dropped an anvil on Wile E. Coyote's head. And my second one is the term folks. I think the first time I heard it was George Bush in the debates referring to people as folks. Now everybody's a folk, from the unemployed in America to the citizenry of Iraq. Everybody's folks. Can I do an impersonation of a turkey before I leave?
Of a turkey? Go right ahead.
All right, happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to you.
Bye.
I'm not sure George W. is personally responsible for the folksiness of folks, but there are various elements of his verbiage that have broken new ground in terms of presentation.
Well, the other phrase that I would like to see purged from the national idiom is make no mistake, which you see in every op-ed piece, in every article, in every sports story. Make no mistake, this team really stinks. Well, if the team really stinks, it's unlikely that you would make a mistake about it. However, I must say the suicide bomber one kind of caught me off guard. That wasn't one that I would immediately... For example, if you're going to criticize the media, how about Jason Blair? Because that happened this year.
It certainly did. Go ahead.
And the Jason Blair thing is interesting because, of course, this is the guy who made up a bunch of stories while he was at the New York Times, described events he didn't see, things that didn't happen, conversations he never had. I think it would be great if we discovered that Jason Blair had been a food critic for the New York Times and had reviewed restaurants that did not exist and had described spices that had not yet been found on this planet. That would be fantastic.
Lest we forget, this is the year also the Stephen Glass movie came out, Shattered Glass.
And is doing fairly well, which is interesting. I don't think Blair's book will do that well, but the Stephen Glass movie has a kind of cult following to it. Culturally, we should also mention the whole Matrix thing.
Ah.
The first Matrix was fantastic. And even though it was filled with all this kind of bogus philosophy, it was great. Mm-hmm. Great story. The second one was terrible, even though it made a lot of money. And the third one is just a kind of rehash of every science fiction movie you've ever seen. And it's amazing how this series that started out with such a big bang has just kind of petered out and just is kind of limping away now. Not unlike Godfather 3. But at least this will probably be the end of all the philosophical musings about how Neo is the savior figure who's going to save Zion. I think we should leave that to Mel Gibson.
I suspect we should. Joshua Sullivan in San Francisco also nominated Matrix Revolutions. Possibly, he wrote, one of the most spectacular self-destructions of a potentially gigantic cinematic franchise. And Joe Queenan, in the 15 seconds we have left, it does make you tremble with the idea of the third Lord of the Rings film just about to come out.
Yes, but the third Lord of the Rings is actually going to be better than the second, which was better than the first, which is something that has never occurred in the history of motion pictures. So it's something to look forward to.
I guess in that respect, we ought to remember that in bowling, a turkey is a three strikes in a row.
That's right.
Joe, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
We appreciate you taking time today for our show. Joe Queenan joined us today from his home in Tarrytown, New York. His most recent book is True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. We're doing NPR Talk of the Nation's Turkey of the Year Awards. We'll be back with more after a break. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're gently jabbing at some of this year's ill-fated ventures. It's the second in our annual Turkey Awards show. What did you think this year was a turkey, a flop? Give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or email us at TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now are a couple of cultural observers. Charlotte Abbott is book news editor from Publishers Weekly. She joins us from her home in Brooklyn, New York, and welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, and happy Thanksgiving, Neil.
And happy Thanksgiving to you. Also to Steve Johnson, who's with us from his home in Oak Park, Illinois. He's a TV critic for the Chicago Tribune, and good to have you back as well.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Let's start with your professional expertise, Charlotte. What were the turkeys of the year in books and literature?
Well, you tipped to Madonna at the beginning of the show.
And I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
No, I have something to say, which is that, I mean, it's just a piece of gossip, really, to pass along. I was talking to one bookseller who was really saddened because she had sold 6 copies of the book to a grandmother who planned to give them to all of her grandchildren. And the next day, the woman returned them because her daughter wouldn't allow them in the house. So much for Madonna's attempt to cultivate listeners who don't know that her career is spiraling downward.
Yeah, she's going after the younger generation, right?
Yeah, Steve, she was on with Leno last night, wasn't it? Wasn't she?
Yeah, her first time. She's for all her kind of well-publicized feuding with Letterman, she's been more of a Letterman gal over the years, kind of kissed and made up with him, and finally sat down with Jay Leno last night.
How long before she is the center square?
She'll need somebody writing her lines for her, I believe.
Well, what about the turkeys that were actually on TV?
Well, probably one of the big ones, which started out as kind of a pop culture amusement and turned tragic by the end of the year, was the two-pronged Michael Jackson overkill. Back in February, there was the kind of Inside Neverland documentary and spin-offs, and all the TV news magazines taking over the network or doing Michael Jackson stories throughout the month, the sweeps month. And then this sweeps month, of course, it turns a lot more serious. But again, he still was first in the hearts of TV news magazine producers.
Let's get Ken on the line. He's with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
How you doing? You know, it's got to be mugshots this year between Nick Nolte, Michael Jackson, and Glenn Campbell.
Oh, that
got a guy with a bad hair day, a guy with the wrong makeup on, and somebody who really needs a shave.
That Glenn Campbell shot, I mean, you have to, in a way, of course, your heart goes out to somebody who's suffering the terrible problems of alcoholism, but oh my gosh.
Well, you know, he had the turkey gizzard there, but that's another story.
That's another story. Ken, thanks very much, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
You too. God bless.
Any general trends on the street, Charlotte?
Well, when it comes to books that are turkeys, you don't have to look much farther than the national bestseller lists. You can take Hillary Clinton's book. Simon & Schuster set a record when they paid $8 million for it, and that was superseded by what Bill Clinton was paid a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
But based on all the intrigue around her private thoughts about Bill and Monica, they felt that it was a good investment. But she didn't give up the goods. People found the book interesting, and it will certainly finish the year as one of the top titles in terms of sales. But the book was a turkey if you were looking for anything more hard-hitting than that she wanted to wring Bill's neck.
And does it make back its advance? I mean, it's my kind of impression that all these huge advance books almost never, you know, the real bestsellers.
This one did. It really, jaws were dropping all over the industry, and others publishers went on record saying that they were green with envy because it did make that advance back. It got up to $1 million very quickly, I would say, within the first couple of weeks after it was published. So that investment was what paid off and was looking good and was earned back very quickly.
Let's get Valerie on the line. Valerie's with us from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm not sure that someone hasn't already used this, but have we already approached the word metrosexual?
Talk about overkill.
We yeah, have... you, we went through all of that hassle saying how unfair it was that women had to pay more for a haircut than a man. And then we decided a man was sexier if, in fact, he spent $25 more for a haircut.
And used grooming products.
Yes, yes. And he has to use grooming products that have orgasmic smells. What happened to real sexual? Why do you have to be a metrosexual? Does that mean that people on farms don't do it?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, can I along those lines, can I nominate a Thanksgiving-themed media overkill?
Sure, go ahead.
It's the Butterball Turkey Hotline story. The first reporter who thought it up, I think, probably had a good idea. You know, he's to talk to the turkey experts and find out what happens. It's actually out here in the Chicago suburbs. Since then, I think it's kind of become holiday cliche number one.
It even, referring back to earlier in the show, it even did make an earlier episode of The West Wing when the president called the Butterball
hot. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Valerie, thanks very much, and a happy metrosexual Thanksgiving to you.
I'm not going to go there, but thanks anyway.
I expect a very attractive turkey on your table.
Hey, Charlotte, any music on your list?
A couple of things. There's been a lot of hype about Joss Stone, who is a kind of 16-year-old R&B wonder who was brought along by Betty Wright, who wrote one of my favorite songs ever, which is The Cleanup Woman. This is from the kind of early 70s soul era, and that was a big hit at the time. And I embraced it. I wanted it to be great, but there was just a bit too much sort of blue-eyed mm-hmming, and basically she was over-emoting a lot.
Well,
I think we can expect great things from her down the line. But
we happen to have had that one ready and queued up, so let's listen to Joss Stone singing a little bit of All the King's Horses.
All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put our two hearts together again. We sat on a wall of happiness. We sat on a wall of love.
Yes, I can understand your disappointment there, Charlotte.
I think she could squeeze seven more notes in if she really, really tried. That reminds me of one of my turkeys would be all the music that came out of American Idol. I mean, I think the show itself has been pretty amusing and pretty much fun to kind of gather around with the family and watch and see if America votes the way they ought to. But then when you get to the actual records that have been put out, just painful. Not as painful as the movie that came out, though.
We have an email from Kurt in Renton, Washington. I almost forgot. You must, he writes, give a turkey award to NBC for taking the wickedly funny British sitcom Couplings, turning it into a flat, lifeless loser, then punting it after 4 weeks when almost any intelligent human could have told them how to fix it and save their investment. For example, they could have gone back to the original concept.
Yes, that was very high on my list. This is the show that basically is supposed to take over for Friends when Friends went off the air at the end of this year. It's kind of a funny idea because Coupling in England was essentially developed as a Friends knockoff. So you have the Friends knockoff being knocked off to take over for Friends back in the States. But it didn't work. This very spectacular, high-profile flame out. They sent kind of stripped away all the subtlety, all the edge to the humor, and made it just very crass and ugly. And credit to the American people for turning up their noses at it.
And then there was the show on Fox that it seemed between every half inning of every baseball game, we saw a promotion for their daring, bold, new Shakespearean drama that was going to be coming up and that lasted, I think, probably in toto a shorter time than all the time devoted to those promos.
Yeah, exactly. Funny thing, there's not, the show, of course, is Skin. And
yes.
You can put pornography on TV. You can promote it during a really well, highly watched baseball playoff series. And if it's a bad show, people just don't care. It's a nice affirmation of American taste, which we don't always get.
Let's go back to the phones. And Jim is with us from Petaluma, California.
Yes, salutations from the egg capital of Northern California. putting aside all butchery of the English language by our current president, I did have one question, and that is, the origin and perhaps, hopefully, the soon demise of this statement, the fact of the matter is?
It's one of those journalistic or broadcasting catchphrases that seems to be a little bit like the flu is supposed to be this year, highly contagious.
I have one to nominate in that category, and that is the phrase, rightly so, which if something is... There's no need to say it, because I think, if something is right, it will be evident to the listener, and I never see why people have to sort of cram that down.
We have a nominee in this category from Eric Black in La Honda, California. I am particularly tired, he writes, of hearing the phrase, at the end of the day, in every other news story or commentary. Fine at first, but it has become a very overworked cliche. How about spicing things up with an occasional ultimately, when you come right down to it, essentially, or another word like that?
Yeah, the one I use is after all that a lot. it's kind of a nice way to signal the reader you're coming to the end without saying in conclusion. But it is hackneyed, and I admit it.
Jim, have a happy Thanksgiving out there in Petaluma.
As well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I wanted to nominate this in the category of It's My Story and I'm Sticking to It. This is an item from yesterday's Washington Post, and in fairness, it only made the paper because it was the brother of the president, Neil Bush, involved. A deposition was taken in the Bush divorce proceedings last spring, and it was made public the day before yesterday, according to Reuters. In it, Neil, 48, admits he had sex with several women while on trips to Asia several years ago. He said the women simply appeared at his hotel room door. Quote, Mr. Bush, you have to admit it's a pretty remarkable thing for a man just to go to a hotel room door and open it and have a woman standing there and have sex with her, Sharon Bush's lawyer said. Quote, it was very unusual, Bush agreed.
Wow, I don't know what to say about that. There was just a revelation by Lawrence Taylor of the Giants. I think he talks about it on 60 Minutes Sunday night, that he used to essentially do that to opposing running backs the day before a big game.
I see. Well, maybe it's not so unusual. It's just Mr. Bush may not have been quite as experienced as Lawrence Taylor.
There you go.
Thank you both very much. Charlotte Abbott is book news editor with Publishers Weekly. She joined us from her home in Brooklyn, New York. Happy Thanksgiving, Charlotte.
Same to you, Neil. Thanks. It was fun.
And Steve Johnson was with us from his home in Oak Park, Illinois. He's a TV critic for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks again.
Thanks, Neil.
And this just in, we have a breaking report from the Turkey News Desk. Let's turn to our foul-talking correspondent in Manhattan, Robert Krolwich. Robert, good to have you on the program.
Nice to be here.
I understand you have some important news on why we call a turkey a turkey.
Yes, I do. I've been researching this question for you so that I could be the first one to give this report at what I guess there is about 25 minutes before the hour, which puts me, I think, in good stead here. The question I wondered is why would a bird, which is a Native American bird, called probably 20 or 30 different names by various different Native American groups, why did it get the name of an Asian country? And frankly, not only did none of those Indians or Native Americans call it a turkey, but even people in Western Europe didn't call it a turkey. In France, it was called a coq d'Inde, which is a chicken of India. And in Italy, it was called a pavo real, meaning, I guess, a real chicken. So it was only called turkey in England.
Hmm.
Now, of course, you'd probably want to prompt me now and ask me what I found out.
And what did you find out when you found out that it was called a turkey only in England?
Yes. Well, now,
We're losing the audio there a little bit, and Robert Krolwich is on the line with us from New York City. Let's see if we can work that out. Are we calling him back? All right, we're going to call Robert back. In the meantime, we're going to take another caller while we remind you that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And this is Daniel, who's with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hello.
Hi, Daniel. What's your turkey of the year?
I'd like to nominate a vehicle.
A vehicle? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the AMC Hummer H2, which is actually a Chevy Tahoe. You see them driving around. Everyone's got these Uber SUVs, but it's a Chevy. I don't understand.
And am I wrong, or is this a reversion to Henry Ford's old dictum that you can buy this in any color so long as it's yellow?
Well, it's like the Hummer, you know, the for every man, you know. And so you see them driving around. Everyone's so proud of their Hummer, but it's a Tahoe. I don't, you know, it's amazing.
Okay. Happy Thanksgiving, Daniel.
You too.
Bye-bye. We're still waiting to get Robert back on the line, so let's go to Cy, who's on his way to Philadelphia.
Hello.
Hi, Cy. You're on the air.
good. I'd like to nominate the owner of the New York Mets, Fred Wilpon.
And what is his particular turkiness this year?
Well, number one, he gets divorced from his partner, who's a baseball person. In fact, his name is...
Doubleday.
Doubleday, right. And puts his son as director of baseball for the New York Mets. His son was born on third base and thinks he hit the triple. Anyway, they go ahead and put a team together that they spend all kinds of money, directly get involved in it, and then when it falls apart, they fire the general manager and the manager. And they go on like they haven't done anything. They are the turkeys of the year.
Okay.
Father and son turkey.
Cy, thanks very much. Drive carefully on your way to Philadelphia and have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Okay.
And Robert Krulwich is back with us on the line from New York. Robert, can you hear me?
I can.
We're having trouble, though, hearing you.
Even now.
And, let's see if we can turn this over to our technical wizards there in the control room and see if we can work this out. Are you on a wireless phone there?
No, I'm on one that's plugged into the wall.
That's what we call a landline and normally highly reliable. I'm going to abandon you to their tender mercies for a moment, Robert.
All right.
Let's go to, this is Pete, who's with us from Alexandria, Minnesota.
Hello.
Hi, Pete.
Yes, my turkey would be the lack of creativity in commercials. In particular, the car manufacturers don't seem to be able to come up with any new jingles, and they keep pummeling us with popular tunes from the 60s and 70s and 80s, and I'd like to see more creativity there. I'm very tired of it. I think they're going after my generation, but it's not working for me.
Peter, are you in the process of driving yourself?
I am.
And
I'm pulling over, actually, is what I'm doing.
I see. And what is it that you're driving, and what tune are you humming?
What am I driving?
Yeah.
I'm driving a Mercury Sable station wagon.
And what was the tune that induced you to buy that particular vehicle?
No tune will make me buy a car. I'm very tired of hearing Led Zeppelin and all. You know, a lot of songs that I once enjoyed, I can't enjoy anymore because I hear them on the TV all the time. In commercials.
Okay, well, Pete, baby, you can drive my car.
All right.
Okay, thanks very much, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Bye-bye. We're going to try Robert Krulwich again.
Hi, I'm still here.
And we can hear you this time.
Oh, good.
All right. Now, some breaking historical news there on the Turkey News Desk. Franklin Delano Roosevelt tried to hijack Thanksgiving Day?
He did indeed, but don't you want to hear the end of the mystery of the turkey story?
We're running out of time, Robert.
All right, well, let me just finish my mystery.
Okay.
The reason why the British people decided to call that bird a turkey is apparently almost accidental. The British who first encountered the bird was shipped from North America on boats, got to Spain, went to North Africa, and somebody in Constantinople decided it was a tasty bird and began serving it and selling it. And it happened that some British people in Constantinople or somewhere near Constantinople tasted the bird and liked it, and thought, well, this bird must be a turkey bird. So they brought it to England, called it a turkey bird there, which is, by the way, a habit of theirs. They called maize from Central America turkey corn. They called rugs turkey rugs, even if they were from Persia. They called bags turkey bags. Kind of, I think, arrogantly, anything near Turkey, or frankly, anything on the other side of the Danube for a British person was called a turkey something. Kind of like the way Manhattan people think of everything on the other side of the Hudson as New Jersey. So this bird arrives in London, is called a turkey bird, then people in London moved to America over the centuries.
And Robert, we're going to have to pick this story up back after the break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for a salute to scientific silliness. Highlights from this year's Ig Nobel Awards ceremony. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're hosting an awards program of our own, Talk of the Nation's second annual Turkey Awards. If you'd like to join us, it's 800-989-8255 or email us, totn@npr.org. And let's get back to the Turkey News Desk for the latest exciting episode as Robert Krulwich continues the story of how the turkey came to be called the turkey.
Well, it's like a soap opera. Well, the end of the story is you have a bird that's native to North America, gets shipped a little too far east, arrives in the Old World in Turkey, gets discovered by Brits in Turkey. They take it back to England, call it a turkey bird. Then they move to North America, and when they see that bird, they think, oh, that's a turkey. The turkey sticks. And this interesting linguistic confusion persists to this day.
I've actually been to Turkey and saw turkeys there, and they call them Hindis. So I think the turkey, it comes from somewhere east of wherever you are.
That's right.
Yeah. There's a certain bird on PBS that I understand has special turkey ties?
Yes, there is. One time I got interested in Big Bird. Big Bird is entirely made of turkey feathers, and it takes about 40,000 turkey feathers to make a Big Bird. There are about 6 Big Bird puppets. And recently, because Americans are eating turkey on a more regular basis, Big Tom turkeys with big feathers are harder and harder to find. So the Henson Production Company has had to find and actually hire a group of turkey sleuths who now search the country looking for the last remaining Big Toms so they can get their bird feathered.
Robert Krulwich, thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
And have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Robert's usually a correspondent with ABC News. Today, though, he joined us from the Turkey Desk in Manhattan. And let's go now to Chicago for some more turkey awards. Tracy Lewis joins us now. She's the co-author of the BAP Handbook, the official guide to the Black American Princess. And it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, Neil, it's so awesome to be here, and thanks for having me back again.
One of your hometown heroes, as I understand, on your list.
Well, although I live in Chicago, I am a native Hoosier. I was born in Gary, and I do believe Michael Jackson and I were born in the same hospital, so I do reserve the right to comment upon him freely. He gets my Who Does the Perp Walk Award. I'm not sure if he should be going to jail or his plastic surgeon. I mean, did you see the man's face and his mugshot? Was that not frightening?
We got an email, by the way, from Adam Martin in Oakland, California, who wanted to nominate Phil Spector, who's been charged with murder. Here's a guy who was totally crazy his whole professional life, making a name for himself as one of the true tortured geniuses of the recording industry. Michael Jackson's a weirdo for sure, he writes, but I think Spector is the real turkey.
You know what? I'm going to probably agree with them, but Michael Jackson just looks worse, so.
Well, think about poor Robert Blake. I mean, his trial is going to be reported in Agate Type.
See, I feel so sorry for Robert because I remember him as a cute little kid on, what is that show? The
Little Rascals.
Little Rascals, you know, and Beretta. He's not a mad killer. I can't accept that, so.
Electric Glide in Blue was my particular favorite of his.
Well, see, I have another good one for you. This one goes to the Washington Post for quashing the Boondock strip for a whole week because Aaron Magruder had his characters trying to find Condoleezza Rice a new boyfriend. It was their misguided childish attempt to save the world by getting her some good old-fashioned loving. And the editor, Len Downey, said that the strip violated our standards for taste, fairness, and invasion of privacy. Has anybody read the Washington Post recently? They do all those things on a regular basis.
Well, I understand you wanted to award a turkey to the president, not though for his politics.
Not for his politics, but actually he gets the Guests Like Fish Stink After 3 Days Award for actually requesting diplomatic immunity to all of his special snipers and such. So if they had to shoot any protesters, they would receive diplomatic immunity. Plus, with all the helicopters and security people, they ruined the Queen's special gardens with all types of rare flowers. So
this all during his visit to the United Kingdom.
Yes, yes, just last week. So he gets the Guest Stink Like Fish After 3 Days Award.
Clark, an emailer, suggests the entire music recording industry going down in flames, suing their customers, that from Anchorage, Alaska. It's the shotgun approach to the Turkey of the Year Awards, though we gave one to the entire state of California earlier.
Yes, I think that one was absolutely perfect. And then, you know, speaking of California and Ben and J-Lo, their failure to get married actually destroyed the careers of hundreds of paparazzi across the globe. So they get the big turkey. And they also get a sub-award for Geely, which is the most unpronounceable and unwatchable film of 2003.
Giggly is what I thought it was for a long time.
If it only had some giggles, maybe. Well, it did have giggles, but not the kind that I think Ben and J-Lo wanted the audience to have.
I was just, I don't know why this popped into my head, but reading a story about Camelot, the musical, and somebody, when it opened, I think in Toronto, wrote it was Gotterdammerung without the laughs. So that reminded me of Giggly.
Hey, you know what? NPR listeners are the most erudite and unbelievably hilarious people on the planet. That's all I have to say. Oh, I have another good award. John Poindexter gets the reminds me of Everything I Hated About the 80s Award for bringing back everything that is scary about the novel 1984 with the Total Information Awareness Project.
Edging into politics there.
Oh, okay. Well, just, you know, and also he's really bald. He looks really weird, so.
Well, a couple of emailers wrote to nominate the Segway scooter. Rob Botner in Driggs, Idaho, noted it never went anywhere. And Kathy Coburn suggested Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Too much hype for a book that wasn't that good. Don't get me wrong. I love Harry Potter. But this one was definitely a once read.
Oh, that's a good one. Ooh, hey, I have another one for you. The Rose by Any Other Name Award is going to go to Paris Hilton, because instead of making me think of all the posh, wonderful things about the Hilton hotels, she makes me think of it, Hilton, the Hilton name, more in a Debbie Does Dallas kind of way.
Tracy Lewis, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me again, Neil. Take care.
Tracy Lewis joined us from her home in Chicago, Illinois, where she's working on another how-to book, The Boomeranger's Guide to Living at Home.